Red Hat X podcast series, discussing topics around application modernization, cloud-native development, securing workloads in the cloud, and partnering with Red Hat. Welcome back, and thank you for joining me today. My name is Brian, and it is a Tech Talk episode for you on the Red Hat X podcast. Most edge computing devices are extremely vulnerable to sophisticated nation-state threat actors' cyber attacks. Edge computing devices can take essentially any form, and endpoints are everywhere due to the proliferation of Internet of Things, IoT, devices. To ensure end and edge nodes are performing as expected, we are protecting against zero-day attacks. Aeronetics built Thor to safeguard and defend Red Hat Enterprise Linux computers and servers. Aeronetics is the first below the operating system to focus on the device and third-party authentication to evaluate human and operating system behaviors. Today, John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aeronetics, returns, and we also welcome Jared Brennan, founder and principal consultant of Brennan Consulting. We're going to be discussing the importance of cybersecurity, but more importantly, the impact of our actions, what we are and aren't doing about it, and how to solve this problem personally, at an enterprise level, and also even nationally. John and Jared, welcome to the show. And John, welcome back. This is the, 20th episode, I think, since you've... Is that right? Were you at the 20th episode already?
I think I prefer N as in numbers, okay. But I think this is number 4.
Okay, we're going to go with that. It's just great to have you. I appreciate it. It's
less algebra.
Yeah. And Jared, thank you. Welcome.
Absolutely.
So we got to, you know what? Let's have you go first, Jared, because we got to hear about you and what you do. But tell us about yourself.
Yeah. So Jared Brennan, founder, principal consultant with Brennan Consulting. I am a music teacher turned hacker. Graduated with a degree in music ed some years ago.
Okay.
Realized before I took my first job that I would have been fired from the public schools. as much as I love teaching, I don't tend to think along the lines that successful career teachers think along. So after some searching, I ended up in tech. And when I found my first cybersecurity gig, I was in love. So I have built security programs from the ground up, managed teams, manage those programs, deploy technologies. I've spent a number of years in consulting, teaching people how to do what I was doing in the enterprise space. A lot of public speaking, and I've got some courses on LinkedIn Learning, some courses on Pluralsight, where I try to reach a larger audience with my teaching. I've worked with technology vendors who are building these things. So I like to think of it as the nerd trifecta.
Nice.
That I've done it from all these different angles. And now that I'm focusing on consulting full-time, I'm doing some advisory work, some virtual CISO work for a handful of clients. So living the life.
That's awesome. Well, tell us a little more about Brennan Consulting and how you got there.
It started out as a media company because I was publishing a comic book for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation.
Nice.
Supporting some friends who were doing a JDRF walk. And, you know, we worked with someone to build the comic out. But then when I started doing my teaching and found more and more opportunities to take all the nerdy stuff that I do and make it accessible and translate it into language that that folks, especially folks starting out, can really wrap their heads around. Mm-hmm. I converted that company over to the consulting company. And, you know, it was just a steady walk of getting to a point where both the relationships and the opportunities that I could make the shift full time. Most of the focus is around that teaching and advisory work, but really getting into Web3 and cybersecurity around more what we're seeing grow in that space with blockchain and such. So I've got my hands in a little bit of everything.
That's really cool. You know, when we first got started, you said that you had gone independent, but you know, you were still doing, I don't remember exactly how you worded it, but I thought, you know, there's a beautiful term out there for those of us who are independent. We own our own companies. It's called proudly unemployable because, you know, we just can't be employed anymore because we have to start something.
Yes.
I love
that. Yes. No, that hunger is real.
Yeah, it really is. It is. I love it. All right. Well, I was going to ask what you're currently nerding out on, but I feel like you're nerding out on kind of everything that you do. It seems like.
Yes. Yeah. I tend to obsess. I go deep when I find something that the whole blockchain Web3. You know, I just read a story in Bloomberg about Jack from Twitter and how much he hates Web3 as a term, right? Never use it in company with him. That's the area that I'm really looking at. And I actually I've got a presentation on quantum computing to help people in cybersecurity understand that practical applications of quantum computing aren't as far off as we think they are. And strategic planning around how do I adjust my cybersecurity program if I'm in a leadership role to prepare for what's coming very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Another area that I'm currently obsessing over.
I love it. Well, John, we know a little bit about you already from the past couple of episodes you've been on, but give us a little more about what you're currently up to. And then, of course, anything new to share about Aeronetics since we last spoke.
What I'm currently up to is teaching climbing in Ohio.
Ooh.
On an alpinist level with all the mountains that we don't have here in Ohio.
800 feet, is that right?
80 feet.
80 feet. All right. Those are some tall mountains. That's impressive, John.
We're trying. And on the computer front, we're putting our software into integrated controllers, partnering with Intel, putting it into firmware.
Nice.
Putting it into small places like your mobile phone, industrial controllers, security.
Awesome. I got to say, though, and I didn't mean to hack on Ohio, but I think it's awesome what you're doing so that when you come out to Colorado, you can take it to, 2.0.
Do it for
That's
real?
The goal.
Yeah. See, and I know you come out a lot. So, hey, Colorado's a great place to get to. Well, that's neat. So, yes, we are going to get into this. And it's one of those things that I think our conversation today is one of those. It seems so simple. It seems so innocent. And yet. So first of all, tell us about the edge, just in case, there are some listening who aren't too terribly familiar with it yet. Explain what it is, what we need to know about it, and then some of the challenges associated with it, and then we'll get deeper into it.
Well, for all the listeners that do or do not understand the edge or endpoint devices, with the implosion of the Internet of Things, it includes your doorbell. It includes your microwave with Wi-Fi, your washing machine, your dishwasher, your mobile phone. These are the edge and endpoint devices that are basically laid bare for security. So when you're in some sketchy Turkish airport getting coffee, connecting to their Wi-Fi, people like me become nervous of what are you really connecting to? Because that's my edge or endpoint device.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, Brian, this is the point where I need to ask if you have rights to the music from Terminator 2. That we could throw that in here.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome? I'll just do that. There you go.
Perfect. just to expand on what John's offering up here, from an enterprise perspective, for years, decades even, we looked at this this exterior perimeter. And we said, as long as it's inside the perimeter, it's safe. And then along comes as a service. And suddenly that perimeter gets a lot blurrier. And to John's point, as we find ways to connect everything to the internet, and this is where I'm going to put my Web3 hat on and look at what decentralization as a practice, that impact that's going to have on both the technology space and the cybersecurity space in coming years. This notion of some perimeters is just vanishing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be impossible to identify and distinguish. And as these devices are all connected and talking to one another, the notion of how do we protect the people using them, the people who rely on these technologies, it's a ridiculously complex and complicated challenge. And I really dig what John's been building out, because people who are doing what he is doing are the ones who are blazing the trail for how we prepare for this world that's coming. And how we keep security and privacy kind of top of mind.
It's true. And I think one of the things, in fact, I know we're going to touch on too, is that it's easy to say, oh well, that's my personal phone, my personal microwave and stuff, but with people working a lot from home right now, still, there's the issues of, okay, how is that affecting your work stuff, your enterprise, the company you're working with and stuff like that too. How does that all kind of tie in?
Right. You used to be banned from taking your phone to your workplace. Mm-hmm. It used to be, that's not part of our work environment. But now working from home, your mobile phone is on your desk next to your computer on your work VPN. I don't think people really realize how dangerous that actually is and how you actually have to guard more than just the computer.
Mm-hmm.
That the perimeter edge vanishing, it's really not if, but when. And people don't think that way.
Yeah, if we look at this through the lens of, I'm going to call it supply chain security, right? Or that kind of extended trust relationships that we have with all these people building technologies, right? Here at home, I have two cameras that are connected to a cloud service. One that looks out the front door for when Amazon shows up entirely too frequently at my house, and one that looks out the back door, which is much prettier and much, much more calming. That technology is a black box to me. I don't know who built it. Well, I know who built it. I won't tell you who the vendor is, but as all of these components were assembled and that box comes to my house, I, as a consumer, am placing trust in the company I purchased this from, that they did their due diligence to secure that.
Mm-hmm.
Because to John's point is I've got all of my devices connected to the same wireless network as that camera.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do get to a point where my refrigerator tells me when we're low on milk and eggs and tells me to go to the store or automatically orders that for me, another use case that consumers are going to adopt pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The more of these devices that connect to the home network, the greater the risk to the companies who have people working remotely and who are working on this network that's a blind spot to their security team.
Yeah, and then you've got people now traveling again. And of course, this was a huge issue, you know, pre-COVID, of course, but it's starting to pick back up too, of course, where people are connecting to hotspots and unsecured wireless wherever they're at, go to the airport, coffee shops, wherever, you know, I mean, it's pretty much anywhere they go now. I'm kind of curious how this is my personal, I'm not going to tell you my personal opinion on this, but what do you guys see as how much people are actually securing their devices in these unsecured places?
I shouldn't laugh. There's a reason I don't play poker professionally. My poker face is garbage.
Same. I can't compete.
When I look at the three of us here on this call,
yeah,
we are in, think of a bell curve, and we're on the far end of the curve where we have a knowledge of technology, we have a knowledge of security and privacy, and we intentionally choose to enforce some of these controls on our devices because we understand them. We know how to turn them on. We understand what the impact is if we don't. Now, look at that same bell curve, and the overwhelming majority of people just don't have that same experience. And it's still too complicated for them. We're trying. There are positive movements in the tech space and the cybersecurity and privacy to help people understand how to do this without having to jump through so many hoops. And then on the far end are the people who either intentionally or unintentionally avoid all the security things. And so if you look at that curve holistically, there are very few people who have the experience and the wherewithal to take proactive security measures. And everybody else is just trusting that someone else is doing it for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been a long time now that Stuxnet even became, when Stuxnet occurred, Stuxnet's now forgotten about.
Good point, except for some people who will never forget about Stuxnet. But I mean, how many listeners right now have even heard that term?
Yeah.
If you haven't, Google it, Stuxnet.
Right. And then how that actually occurred should terrify you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so it's like you take your
explain it, John. Yeah. Explain
you take your mobile phone and connect to your local hotspot, your local Starbucks. You get your drink and you happily walk out.
Mm-hmm.
Completely unaware of that attack and how your mobile phone just became liable. So when you return home, what was ever in your mobile phone is now in your home network.
Mm-hmm.
And then at Friday night, you have a party with all your friends. They all connect to your hotspot too. These things terrify me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Talk about VPNs, because I mean, Jared, you brought that up earlier, but I mean, that's what a lot of people are saying. Well, you got to have at least a VPN. You get one on your phone. You know, you've got your hardware VPN. Talk about that stuff, because clearly that's not enough.
VPNs don't do anything, especially when you pay someone. You're just routing your traffic through another service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will offer this up as a father of three, my youngest of which is 18. So I've had three kids go through middle school and high school. And one of the things I learned quickly, and I have taught my kids about being responsible digital citizens. And I've taught them that if you're not paying for something, you are the product, that someone is collecting data from your traffic. And if you go into any public school in the United States and ask a random kid in the hallway, do you have a VPN installed on your phone? They will say at least one. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because it's how they get around the URL filter that blocks their access to different websites. And yes, VPN does encrypt traffic between you and the people you're talking to. And if it is a trusted service, one that you know that is privacy centric, right, is has a good reputation for protecting your data, then you have a higher level of confidence that they're doing the right thing. But when we're talking about a compromise of your device, right? When you connect to the Wi-Fi and then turn on the VPN, it's too late. If your device is already compromised, it just means that all of the traffic from the compromised device to wherever it's talking is encrypted. Well, good. That just makes it harder for the security people to see what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, VPN does have value in protecting data in transit.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to John's point, you know, it's not a be all end all when it comes to security. There's still a risk of your device being compromised.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so John, you know, you mentioned it infects your phone. You come home, you get onto your wireless, your friends come over. Jared, you were mentioning people working from home, the phone affects, you know, now your work and the company that you're working with. And then, of course, you know, another thing is what about, hey, you know, yesterday's computer status, you're all good. You close down, you jump back up the next morning, turn it on, and you're taking it for granted, yesterday's status and stuff. I mean, there's all these little things. So what do we do? What's the solution here?
As I think we mentioned previously, Brian, on maybe another podcast, was we need to be aware of what we can and cannot be involved in and what we can and cannot do. Ignorance is not bliss.
Mm-hmm.
It terrifies people like Jared and I.
But terrifies you, John. I am the one who knocks. But go ahead.
I recently watched Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
And
there's a section in that movie where they come down the stairs and he's like, did you not use the cage? Well, I knew it was him. He just entered. And it's like, it reeks to zero trust to me.
Yeah.
And that we need that process that exists someplace without us, that I don't blindly turn on my computer, that I don't blindly connect to hotspots, that I don't blindly have my phone just operating like it did yesterday. It's the biggest liability to receive a computer in the mail or a phone in the mail, because you cannot verify it has not been tampered with.
Yeah,
the end user is given everything, and there's no reason why you cannot authenticate that transaction.
Yeah, let me, if I could, John, let me step back to that bell curve comment, because you know, Brian, if I've got a if I'm in an enterprise role, right, I'm working for Megacorp, right, a little Mr. Robot reference, but I'm or Evil Corp. That was the sorry. But you're working for a large organization and they've got a budget. They've got a team. They know this stuff, right? And if you're on that team, I'm talking to you right now, right? If you have the knowledge and the capability to protect your endpoints, then the question, what do we do about it, is you recognize first and foremost, like John said, that, you know, ignorance is not a bliss. It's not an option here. We've got to take our heads out of the sand and say, you know, yes, we've got devices that have sensitive data, that have access to sensitive systems. And we need to ensure that we've got a level of protection on those devices that can protect people in this new environment. If you look at your home network, I mentioned, you know, the size of my family. You know, if my kids bring a friend home and that friend jumps on the Wi-Fi, that's a new threat vector, right? Mm-hmm. I may have taught my kids how to be responsible digital citizens, and they may have taken steps at my request to put controls on their devices. But they have a friend who walks in who was at that coffee shop and got popped and now is walking around with their Typhoid Mary device that infects every network that they connect to.
Yeah.
As soon as they show up at my house, that device is going to attack my work laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we have a supply chain issue where my wife finds the fancy new IoT device, right? We want to take our garage door and connect it to Wi-Fi, which is a thing. I have a friend who does pen testing, mm-hmm, of devices like garage doors you control from your smartphone. He finds some pretty amazing stuff. If I look at this continued addition of these IoT devices to my home network, every one of them becomes that potential attack vector.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about security and we talk about the edge and we throw all these terms around, what we're really pushing toward is, from the enterprise perspective, do I have a high enough level of assurance that I've created this little bastion in this device, this host, that any device that has access to company systems and company data is watching for this kind of traffic and taking action to prevent it, watching for these attacks. And that's just at an enterprise level. I don't think we're ready for the consumer level yet. Keep an eye on the CES trade show. It'll come,
mm-hmm,
where we're putting this on personal devices and protecting people at home. But I really think that it has to get down to that notion that, yeah, if we're going to let people connect with a device, we've got to enable them to protect the device at the device level. And if I get really nerdy about it, I look at all the chatter we've had about Ring Zero. And, you know, for John, I want you to jump in and expand on this if you could, but you can't just install an anti-malware agent, an endpoint detection and response agent on a device and say, okay, we're good. You got to push a little deeper. You've got to be a little more forward thinking than that. And John, do you want to talk about the whole Ring Zero idea?
I could, because Ring Zero is a lost concept to people. It doesn't exist. There's a book I just took out on rootkit hacking. It's available in Ohio libraries. And in it, in the appendix, is how to build your own rootkit.
That's great.
In Ring Zero.
Yeah.
But it takes for granted you read all 20 chapters before,
yeah,
and you understand all 20 chapters before. There was, on one hand, my visit to a family friend installing his cameras, three of his cameras, so we can watch his garage, his backyard, and his porch. He feels more secure with them. On the other hand, I participated in a federal innovation rapid prototype event that researched the firmware on your garage door, on your mobile phone, on your Ring, like everywhere. And what we need to recognize is that your edge and your endpoints are everywhere. There is no perimeter.
Mm.
Yeah. You have enterprises that behave, there's still a perimeter. They still have their building, which, where we are now, why are you still paying rent?
Oh, you're going to get on a political soapbox, aren't you, John?
We can avoid that, but it's the recognition that there is no more perimeter.
Yeah.
The perimeter disappeared years ago. If I have to put a mark on it, probably like 2000, the whole first .com bust.
Yeah.
That's probably when cell phones and mobile phones and your BlackBerry and your paging system. Luckily me, I never had a pager. As my systems administrator experience when I was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I lamented having a pager and how, like, all, it added more vulnerabilities than it actually provided solutions. Mm-hmm. Because then you have people pinging your pager or giving you spam.
When you're telling us, John, is you're bragging that you actually got to sleep through the night because nobody was pinging you at 3 a.m. when
that's
everything
nice.
Broke. Yeah, I feel that.
That's all true. Yeah. Build things resilient so you can actually relax and build the thing that you can actually add to value with your family.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Things that matter. Because at the end of the day, if they really want to get at your garage door and their headset on it, get an analog garage door.
Yeah.
And we're talking about consumer devices like garage doors, refrigerators, and toasters. When I look at nation states and I look at, I'm going to offer up my own movie reference, which, John, I have a whole nother level of respect for you with the Guy Ritchie call out Lock Stock. That's such a great flick. But if you look at, I think it was Die Hard 4. It wasn't really a Die Hard movie. It was adapted from a book and they just threw John McClane's name on it and said, hey, new Die Hard. But the notion of a fire sale, and they introduce this character who is able to wreak havoc globally by manipulating the SCADA systems and industrial control systems that run our critical national infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We can sit there and throw back popcorn and milk duds and watch McClane ramp motorcycles into helicopters and have a grand old time.
Yeah.
But that to me is the real frightening, terrifying aspect of what we're talking about today. Because our industrial control system security and folks who are listening who work in that space, my hat is off to you because I know what you're up against. We are woefully behind. And I'm not just talking we as in a single nation. I am talking globally. That is arguably the most vulnerable aspect of every nation. It's that war games, mutually assured destruction call out that as soon as one nation goes after somebody else's water supply or power grid, then gloves are off and everybody's doing it. And boy, when we talk about perimeter and edge security and device security, and if we're not paying attention to the risks in that ICS space, we're ignoring something that can have massive loss of life and financial and societal impact. It's just terrifying.
Yeah. Well, I know you hear about
the scope is large.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you hear about the nuclear threats and this is worse.
Yes. Yeah. This is
worse because I don't know if the listeners, when this actually is published, the Russian state attacking the Ukrainian power grid.
Yep.
There was a meeting I had in the Maryland area last fall with a member of MIT talking about my software and how people are ignorant to the whole power grid, to industrial control security. That we need a process that actually authenticates that controller has not been altered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are a very large country. We have a lot of endpoints. If you hop on Shodan, I don't know if you've heard of Shodan, Brian, but it's shodan.io. You can punch in any country and find endpoints. And with there's no perimeter, I'm frankly terrified that my car is liable, like my phone is liable, like my computer. And the goal is not to scare our listener or scare you, Brian, but it's that we need this. This is of national importance.
And there are a lot of folks working on this and a lot of folks trying to figure out what do we do about it. And where, you know, people like John come into play and you look at the tech that he's built, it's a solution.
Yeah.
Right. And there's not one solution that magically fixes everything, right? Sure. There's no such thing as a silver bullet in that cybersecurity space. But technologies that dig deep into these devices and say, yeah, we understand they're exposed. They have to be accessible, or somebody chose to make them accessible over the internet, or somebody misconfigured something and whoops, now anybody can get to it over the internet.
Yeah.
Knowing that those things are happening today, deploying technologies that get deep into the devices and say, look, we're just going to assume that the identity controls failed, that the perimeter controls failed, that the criminals, the threat actors have made it all the way to the device and they want to do something bad. To have something at the device level that's watching to say, wait a minute, that's bad and I'm not going to allow it. And is able to be deeply embedded at a level that those threat actors can't get to without tripping any alarms, it's a very forward thinking approach to a problem that a lot of folks in cybersecurity are keenly aware of.
Yeah, and that's good. And I'm glad it's being dealt with. And John, I'm glad that you're a part of this as well. So wait, I just wanted to bring this up to make sure we're on the same page here. Cause you know, you were talking earlier that it's like, yeah, you know, we're talking a lot about consumer devices and stuff, but let's talk about the national level. But wouldn't it make sense? And I'm going to assume this has already been done because, you know, I'm not part of the DOD or anything, so I don't know. But wouldn't it make sense, though, to attack through consumer devices?
Let's not scare everyone listening to this.
No, I'm just saying.
It makes perfect sense, yeah. Brian.
So then how don't we need to be dealing with attacking, that?
Yeah, but the person you're attacking has no context.
Exactly.
Of that being a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then when you were talking about that, right now the solutions are mainly for enterprise and it's not yet for consumer. I mean, shouldn't it be for consumer because of that?
It could be.
Okay.
I've been floating ideas, Brian, Jared, of making my software free for non-commercial use.
Love it, John.
Yeah.
At some point, talking with Red Hat partner people, good luck making it only free for non-commercial use. And so I've also built further mechanisms in our low-level program that would really make it difficult and it would guard the company and guard you.
Yeah.
And it's a method, like I think we mentioned previously, of a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
And it's about time that research scientists and engineers that are in charge of cyber systems and operations recognize the problems in their water treatment facility or their electric grid office.
Yeah. Yeah, John, the challenge there though, and Brian, the wall we're up against as a cybersecurity community when it comes to protecting consumers at the consumer level, at their devices, right, is that it's that bell curve again.
Yeah.
Because you have to have people who are informed and motivated enough, that combination of criteria, to know that they need this and then to take action on that knowledge, which really puts the onus on the device manufacturers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll call this what it is. It's irresponsible. If you are in the technology space and developing a technology and not considering these threats in the architecture of your technology for the sake of shaving a few bucks off or going to market a few weeks quicker. Personally, and John knows, I've got a couple of courses on ethics in information and cybersecurity. It's a very important point to me. And if you're in a leadership role, making decisions about where to apply your capital toward where to apply R&D funds and resources, and security is a part of it, then you're being irresponsible. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
And I'll go to the mattresses on that one. Let's big whoop on a fight about it.
It's a good point.
If I look at this from a threat actor perspective, and I'll throw out another movie reference, Logan, based on the old man Logan comics from Marvel, but but they're the self-driving trucks. There's a scene toward the end of the movie with some self-driving semis that are just tearing down the highway.
Yeah.
And we look at that and say, X-Men, science fiction, fantasy. Nope.
Yeah.
Folks, we have had self-driving trucks here in Ohio. There's a dedicated corridor from Columbus to Northwest Ohio that has been running self-driving trucks for years. This was approved at the government level that they could use this corridor for testing this technology. And as we look at the number of trucks on the interstates today and the number of cars that unfortunately aren't always respectful of the trucker's perspective and giving them enough clearance to move lanes and such. What if a threat actor was able to get into these devices and send a command to say, hey, everybody, next Tuesday at 3:45 p.m., I want you to turn left, hard left, wherever you're doing. The loss of life and the collateral damage from that one simple little command to the computer that's managing these self-driving vehicles would be catastrophic. It would be absolutely devastating. People would lose family members. There would be such an incredible disruption to the supply chain that we'd have another run on toilet paper here in the US because everybody's like, oh no, we're running out. We've got to go out and buy the essentials. And so these scenarios, like to me, I look at them and I think, well, yeah, we've seen this in science fiction and television and movies, but working in this space, you know, it's a threat model. It's a scenario that we need to consider because this is how this technology works today. And we're only going to rely on it more and more. There's no putting the genie back in the bottle, right? Pandora's box is open. And so all this stuff is just flowing out. We need to take action. And if the leaders of organizations developing these technologies, and I'm looking at the leaders of the self-driving autos, I'm looking at the leaders who are manufacturing smartphones. If you are sitting there and shaking or dusting off your hands and saying, nope, that's on the consumer to turn that on, then, you know, that's on your hands when this happens. That's on your conscience that you could have stepped in and taken action. So I'll get off my soapbox.
No, this is good. So
can see me standing.
So you're saying that really it's the, so talk about then the solution. So of course the consumers have to turn it on and, you know, you do, let's be completely honest, you know, in a world where people have dealt with a lot of pain over the last few years, people are burying their heads in the sand again. And they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to pretend it's real. I mean, taking a step back, people who are not in the world of cybersecurity, they want to ignore it. They want to pretend it's not real. They want to just pretend like it won't affect them, you know, or they don't know. So you're saying that it's not just the responsibility of the consumer, and regardless of the consumer, whether it's personal or even an enterprise consumer, it's on the responsibility. Like talk about
it's
the
everyone.
So what do people from both sides need to actually do? And then what is the actual solution that we need to work towards, even if we're not there yet?
It's similar to, I imagine most listeners have a DUNS number. And SAM.gov just changed from DUNS, which have been used for the last 100 years, to a unique identifier. And you think about that for a moment, that the attackers know you and your behavior. They know your identity. I get requests that are fraud for my, they're fraud on behalf of my bank, trying to trick me into calling this number. How they received the last four of my bank account information, I'm really curious, but I don't have the time to sort that out.
Tell you what, there was a John Oliver sketch recently that answered that. So I'll toss that out there. Folks, go to my LinkedIn profile. I shared the link. That's all I'm saying on that one. Go ahead, John.
But it's we all need to be aware that your identity has been stolen.
Yeah.
And that even at some point, social security numbers weren't built for an internet. They weren't built for Web 3.
They weren't.
And so when you have Web 3 and your Bitcoin, your blockchain, I know we've discussed offer on the record of this podcast, but what happens when your protocol is damaged and your protocol is sending other information along with it every packet? How would you know?
Or when enough nodes in the chain are compromised that the attackers abuse the functionality that was built in by design, as we saw with one of the recent breaches. But
It's the volume. And most attackers are in and out, and the other attackers just sit there and lurk. And then you have other attackers nowadays that not only lurk and get in and out, but they take your data and put it on the dark deep web and put it for sale.
Yeah, what I would add to that, Brian, if we look at this, the notion of how much is on the consumer to protect this and how much is on the company, mm-hmm. right, the manufacturer. We have, excuse me, we have standards and frameworks and publicly available information that provides some guidance on how to secure this stuff. And there are some industries where participation in the industry requires compliance with some of these standards, right? If you work in public utilities, electricity, generation, distribution, transmission, then in the US, the NERC-CIP standards, North American Energy Reliability Council's Critical Infrastructure Protection, they have a lot of rules that you have to follow to secure things.
Right. And but we also, Jared, not to totally cut off, but
jump in.
Nine out of 10 organizations that are fully compliant are whack-a-mole. Yeah. They're hacked.
Well, and the rules for compliance are not keeping up with the change in technology. They will never. I mean, it is absolutely hilarious if you watch a congressional hearing in the United States where technology is the subject matter, and you understand that from a legislative perspective, that there's an immense disconnect between people who are writing the laws. And I know I'm making a generalization here, but there are examples that we can point to of people who fundamentally misunderstand the technology that they're writing these laws about. And in a free market society, we have relied again and again on allowing the market to dictate who the winners are and who the losers are. Mm-hmm. And so there's an opportunity for regular folks to apply pressure to say, I'm only going to buy technology if I understand that it's going through this vetting. That, you know, if I want to go out and get that Tesla, then I want assurance that it is not going to turn left on a Tuesday without me flipping the steering wheel. That there's some sticker that Elon can put on that to say, we did security right, right? We thought about it. And, you know, we want you as a consumer to know that we take your physical safety and your safety in this digital world seriously. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we're seeing as cybersecurity becomes a board level issue is these board members. I've got a friend who works for the company Black Cloak, and this company has risen up to provide services to help executives protect their stuff at home because they understand, the leaders of companies around the world understand that they've got to take care of this stuff at home, and they just don't have the knowledge, the skills, the time to do it. So they're hiring companies to take care of that for them. As that knowledge that this stuff is important continues to permeate, it's going to influence the market. And we are going to see organizations, which I want to call back to the Consumer Electronic Trade Show, where people step on the floor and say, hey, we have the garage door opener that you can run from your phone. Mm-hmm. But the difference between us and the people next to us is that we built security and privacy in from day one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when consumers start saying, I like it, I'm going to buy yours instead of theirs because that's important to me, then I think we catch the attention of people at the higher ups to say, whoa, we can make more money if we do this security thing right.
Right.
And so I think there's going to be a market pressure that helps us drive this forward.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I also think that if you're already in a position of leadership, and you are responsible for building and deploying technologies that have these privacy and security implications, you don't need to wait for the consumers to tell you they want it, right? If Henry Ford had gone to people and said, tell me what you want me to build, they would have said, well, build us a faster horse.
Exactly.
And we never would have had the Model T.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you've got those visionary leaders who are stepping back, and I look at Jack from Twitter and say again, I mean, what he's done with Bitcoin, I know some people think he's a cult leader. Personally, he's onto something. And like what he understands, you look at his track record in technology, he understands. the way these things are changing require that people with vision step into these leadership roles and say, this is how we're going to do it going forward. And if you had somebody at a large medical device manufacturer, right, an automotive manufacturer, say, we want to be the leader in this space. And we're going to give John a call and say, John, come in and show us how you can help us protect this at that ring zero level. Then I think that's a more powerful motivator. That's a more powerful agent of change than waiting for the consumers to say, this is what we want.
Yeah.
Well, imagine if you were a consumer with security, even as a 10% or 1%, that when you went to go buy a Tesla car, you recognized that's a software company that built a car.
Yeah.
That's
the world we're living
security
in.
Built, you have then security built in. And it's not shame on you for buying the Tesla. It's shame on Elon for not putting security in his car where it belongs.
Yeah.
And not linking it to your phone anyhow, because you're driving the car. Wouldn't it be nice to know that some hacker drove by and Wi-Fi hacked or Bluetooth hacked your car while you were sleeping? Because how would you know?
Yeah. Now, I do feel obligated at this point to recognize that there are people working for these organizations who are building security mm-hmm. in. Mm-hmm. And if you're one of those listeners, I want you to know we're not calling you to task here. We're not putting you on blast saying, come on, get your act together. That is not the point at all.
Yeah.
But you know, you're probably having these same conversations internally to try to get your leadership to understand why this stuff is important.
Yeah.
Send them a link to this episode. They need to hear it.
Oh, I agree. This is really, really good conversation. And this is exactly what we need to be discussing and brainstorming in order to find the best solutions. And so I appreciate you two coming on and delivering your perspectives because, you know, you guys are in the midst of this kind of thing. And so, you know, you see it. And that's the thing, you know, not everyone is going to have this level of passion or time to be able to devote to this, but they need to know it. And so I really appreciate that you guys are taking charge and front runners in this whole thing and then educating the rest of us. And so where do we go for more information and resources?
Brian, you can still find myself and Aeronetics at aronetics.com.
Okay.
And within there, we posted under lock and key a few artifacts that are worth note to listen to or to watch and how you can actually impact and keep your whole family safe. Like Jared mentioned, teaching, educating his family on how to actually behave.
And John, you've got your email address out there too. It doesn't hurt folks to have just a conversation. Reach out. Hey, can I jump on a call? Doesn't even have to have video. You can stay in your pajamas, leave the video off. No judgment free zone. But you know, for me, what I would ask folks is reach out to me on LinkedIn, Jared Brennan. I'm not hard to find out there. I am not the biggest fan of social media. Conversation for another day, but I do appreciate that platform enables me to have meaningful conversations about stuff in this space. And you know, I will toss questions out to folks that I speak with. I'll share resources that I found useful and look for conversations in the comments or in the messages to give us a chance to hash it out, because I'm a big advocate of civil discourse, just generally speaking. And I think that, you know, when you say, what do we do next, Brian? And, you know, what do we look for? Find people to talk to.
Yeah.
Have these conversations. Don't just sit and wax poetic, but get out in front of somebody, make yourself uncomfortable and, you know, have a conversation about this stuff, because through those conversations, we have revelations and understandings of things that we didn't understand before. And that understanding that we develop then leads to the change that we need to see in the world to make this stuff better.
Yeah.
Definitely. So hit me up on LinkedIn. That'd be my request.
Love it. Well, John and Jared, I really appreciate you both and appreciate what you're doing. And thank you for taking the time to educate us and joining us on the show.
Appreciate it,
Brian. Thank you, Brian. Thank you.
John Aaron, founder and CEO of Aeronetics, and Jared Brennan, founder and principal consultant of Brennan Consulting. My name is Brian. Thank you again for joining us here on the Red Hat X podcast. For more information on Aeronetics and today's discussion, go to aeronetics.com. And if you want to check out Jared and his consulting and also just connect with him, head on over to LinkedIn to connect with Jared at Jared Brennan. That is JerodBrennen. Have a wonderful day. Thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you in the next episode.